Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of May 2nd, 2017. Oh, boy. Today, we're joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker, who is very much centered in the year 2017. Good to have you here, D.R.
Good. How are you doing?
So, I wish it was 2016 at some level. So, this past, let's see now, it's almost 10 days ago, was Earth Day. April 22nd mm-hmm. was Earth Day. There were marches. There were things going on. And our erstwhile ferret-haired, Russophile president reacted to the science march, hundreds of thousands of people in the street protesting the degradation of science under the Trump administration. He put out a tweet that I don't even want to honor with a full quotation. But basically he said, yeah, we love the environment bigly, but jobs matter too. Right? Mm-hmm. Something like, did you see that tweet?
Yeah, he also put out a statement basically, you know, talking about how he still is for clean air and clean water. If he's so for clean water, how come, Scott Pruitt hasn't done a thing about, you know, cleaning up Flint?
Yeah. But I guess it what it did for me was to raise or sort of go back to the question of the eternal conflict, which is this beat up old zombie in formaldehyde that people mm-hmm. like Trump keep taking out of the closet to say that you cannot have good environmental practice and jobs at the same time. Right? Mm-hmm. Would you say that that's a classic argument against any environmental action?
Exactly. It's one of these things that they always bring up, but it was refuted years ago by the late Senator Gaylord Nelson, the founder of Earth Day, who famously said that the economy is a wholly owned subsidiary of the environment, not the other way around.
True enough. But I think that in this day and age where I guess there's some statistics like there's more people working in, I don't know. The number of people working in solar jobs, which involves the production of solar panels, the installation of solar panels, all that kind of stuff, that dwarfs the number of coal miners in the United States, right? And
exactly.
The upside for jobs in solar sort of is a proxy for green energy stuff in general. Mm-hmm. It's huge. And the idea that our president would make these statements just seems to be so out of touch with reality, which, of course, says nothing. But I mean,
exactly. And if you think about, you know, the expanding power and success of, you know, clean energy jobs versus coal jobs, you know, let's ask an obvious question. Have you ever heard of anyone catching black lung disease from putting up a wind turbine or installing a solar panel?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think you could probably see, I can't find it now, but there was a report came out of Australia, I saw mm-hmm. on Facebook someplace, how, you know, they had this big investigation to try and, you know, find all the people who were harmed by wind turbine syndrome, right, with the mm-hmm. noise and whatnot, and they couldn't mm-hmm. find anybody. Basically, the mm-hmm. report had to, they said that they couldn't find anyone who had been injured, and in fact, what they found was that it's like the vast, like 99% of the 10,000 complaints all came from 10 people, right? So, mm-hmm. so it's this very motivated. But to your point, I mean, you're right. The health benefits of clean energy far outweigh, are huge, right? In addition to the fact that people have jobs. I think that it's, mm-hmm. So it's important not to accept these kind of ideas that, you know, Trump tries to just keep repeating, right? You just tell a lie often enough and people begin to believe it, right? Because they're just tired of resisting.
I guess we can call Trump a stone cold liar.
Yeah. Well, so there you go. I mean, one thing is, when Comrade Trump puts up this nonsense about jobs and the environment being in competition, it's just not true anymore. In fact, the renewable energy, the price of renewable energy is dropping dramatically. Right? Again, you have to go. You can go online and find this stuff. It's not like a it's no secret. But the electricity from wind and solar is now competitive in many instances. And there you go. So let me just, we're all about Mr. Trump for the moment, but something I forgot to mention before, but there was the current administration is now going to accuse our dear polite friends north of the border in Canada of putting an unfair excise tax or subsidizing the production of soft lumber. You see that, DR, right? So they accuses the Canadian government of subsidizing the production of lumber, which then undercuts the lumber makers in the United States, although it helps all the home construction guys. So why am I talking about that? Well, if you're concerned about subsidizing the production of something in Canada, you should darn well look at the subsidies the U.S. federal government provides to the coal industry and the oil industry to extract this stuff on your U.S. citizens' personal property of the federal lands. I mean, it's just, it's so beyond like any kind of non-hypocritical, it's almost delusional kind of accusations, right?
It's just sort of, you know, or what was that old song from the movie South Park, Blame Canada? It's like he's taking that to heart.
Yeah, I mean, it's not to go off, you know, too far, but the idea that we're going to have a fight with Canada. I mean, really? God, I don't know. So there's the jobs thing. There's the subsidies for Canada. There's lots of other terrible things that this guy has done recently. One of them, DR, has been, again, I mean, beating up on the Donald is too easy. But he is now trying to review. He loves these executive orders where he's simply ordering a review of something, and he expects to get credit for it, right? Mm-hmm. The president can order to review something on a napkin, and it'll happen. It's not an executive order. Anyway, he's going to order a review of the designation of national monuments that people like President Obama did, in particular, like in the Katahdin National Forest up in Maine and the seamounts off the New England coast. And it is... I mean, I remember talking about this last fall, that what Obama had done was to identify these things under some kind of funky Antiquities Act that could not be reversed by law, right? There was no mechanism for reversing it. But Trump's going to go after it. And I heard that, so Trump wants to review the national monument status of this forest up in northern Maine. I think it's called the Katahdin Forest Monument. And the people who are there love the monument because it is brought in tourism. All of a sudden, their economy is picked up, right?
So, exactly.
Those Canadians had undercut all the lumber they were trying to chop down, and now they had a new industry, and the Donald is trying to kill it. Did you see that, DR? I mean, tell me. Talk me down.
Yes, so much for trying to make tourism great again. It's this sort of, you know, again, once again, you see the Trump administration sort of bending over backwards to sort of appease people who want to sort of develop every last square inch of land in this country. And just, you know, as you read these stories about what this executive order is intended to do, you can just witness, you know, Teddy Roosevelt spinning in his grave.
Yeah. Well, then, so there was another report I heard on the radio was saying that today the administration met with CEOs of automobile companies. As a follow-up to another one of Donald Trump's empty kind of executive orders to review the Obama-era controls of gas mileage, right? So under the Obama regime, they forced an agreement with the auto companies, basically for the bailout, right? GM had, had to accept this, that by the year something like 2024, the average fuel economy of all cars sold by the auto industry would be 54 miles per gallon, right? Which is a pretty impressive thing. But now Trumpster wants to roll that back. And the point of the NPR report that I listened to was basically saying that there are like 20 peer review papers, studies that support the conclusion that you can, in fact, profitably make a 54 mile per gallon car. And if that the EPA, if Trump wants to roll that back, then they have to produce another 20 peer-reviewed scientific articles that say the opposite thing, which is a hard thing to do, right?
Yes, and there was also an interesting report on NBCNews.com, basically making the point that California is still planning to push for its strong auto emission standards and plans to fight the Trump administration. Obviously, EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt has yet to revoke the permission that California has to maintain stronger, you know, automobile standards than the rest of the country has, even though, again, we've mentioned before, George W. Bush's EPA Administrator Johnson, I believe, not Scott Johnson, Stephen Johnson, he revoked that, and that led to a legal fight that Obama resolved by allowing that special permission to go through. So it is interesting to see, you know, California standing up for states' rights, whereas the supposed conservative pro states' rights administration wants to use overreaching federal government to basically mandate how the way all the cars are made in this country. It's just an interesting reversal of roles here.
Yeah, and it's true as well that Massachusetts is also abides by the California limit, right? So other states can join California. I think there's 13 states. Massachusetts is one of those 13. But if you have states like California, New York, Massachusetts, presumably New Jersey, you know, probably populated, heavily populated eastern states, that's a lot of cars. So the automobile industry does not want to have multiple standards. And it'd be really interesting to have this fight where Scott Pruitt must reject the California standard in order to get this weak national standard, single weak national standard. The only way he can do it is by overruling California, and that will be a political Donnybrook, right? And you know where it's going to end up. It's going to end up in front of our newfound hanging Neil Gorsuch, right?
Exactly. Right. I mean, the only relief is that, you know, if you go back to Mass versus EPA and you know, that fight over automobile emission standards, at least technically you still have the same ideological configuration that existed in that ruling 10 years ago. Because remember, Scalia was in the minority. Yeah. Scalia was one of the four dissenters in that ruling.
Yep.
And that ideological configuration still holds, although you do wonder for how long that will be the case.
Long live Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Yeah. I mean, you may recall years ago when it appeared that George W. Bush might have another Supreme Court nominee, Al Franken, then a radio host on Air America, would do this parody song called "Hang On, Stevens," referring to John Paul Stevens. Stevens, hang on.
Oh, my God. And I'll just note in passing, because there's a couple other more upbeat topics that we want to get to. But there are reports that Ivanka and Jared are arm wrestling Steve Bannon and Reince Priebus over the Paris Accord. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Talk about a family feud. Sort of, I'll get all those guys in one room. I'd like to be a fly on the wall to see how that proceeds.
Exactly.
But we don't. So just so that everyone's on the same page, about 10 days ago, there was a much ballyhooed meeting that was supposed to happen, where all these movers and shakers tried to decide if the United States should stay within the Paris Accord, the very important climate treaty that has huge implications on all kinds of places. And of course, at the last minute, that meeting got canceled. It was supposed to happen again on April 27th, right? Thursday, April 27th. They were all going to get together. We'll see what comes out of that. I mean, there are some cooler heads saying that Trump can do all the damage he wants without even pulling out of the Paris Accord, which is, unfortunately, there's a lot of truth to. But we'll see where that goes, right, DR?
But if you think about some of the folks, you know, who want out of the Paris Climate Accord, I know I've used this analogy before, but when you think of people like, you know, Pruitt and Bannon, it reminds me of the movie advertisement for the John Travolta film Lucky Numbers with Lisa Kudrow, and the tagline was, "When they put their heads together, it's a no-brainer."
Oh, yes. snap, I think they say, right? So tell me, DR. There is interesting better news here, which actually comes a lot from Massachusetts, right? About carbon taxes and the impacts of carbon fees and carbon pricing, whatnot. Tell me, what's the story that you were so good to pick up on?
Yes, well, two stories in particular. There's a new study from the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health that found that if Massachusetts implemented its own carbon price, the state would save $2.9 billion in projected health care costs by reducing air pollution. And there was also an additional report by the Valley Advocate noting that eight towns in western Massachusetts are planning to pass non-binding resolutions calling upon Massachusetts to implement a carbon price. Those eight towns are Amherst, Ashfield, Buckland, Charlemont, Conway, Plainfield, Shutesbury, and Watling. This is an initiative by the Western Mass branch of Citizens Climate Lobby, and it'll be very, very interesting to see if these non-binding initiatives pass. The story notes that on April 20th, Northampton City Council voted unanimously in favor of a non-binding resolution calling for a carbon fee in this state. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting to see, again, if Massachusetts will succeed where Washington State failed in becoming the first state to put a price on carbon. It'll be also be interesting to see how this debate, you know, manifests itself in 2017 and 2018 going into obviously a gubernatorial race, which has obvious, you know, state and national climate implications, because obviously people are going to be looking to Massachusetts to see how aggressively we will lead on this issue.
And I think that the idea that eight towns in western Massachusetts would pass non-binding resolutions to put a, I mean, in some level, I mean, that there's little practical consequence of that for, say, the town of Amherst, but there's huge political consequence, because that is a message. When the town council passes that kind of a thing, the state representative is very aware, right? The state representative knows that happened, and all of a sudden he or she is under a different kind of pressure to treat the carbon pricing bills in the state legislature differently. Mm-hmm. And that is why, so last week we talked about the MCAN, Mass Climate Action Network's legislative priorities, right? And there are certain bills on, and one of them being carbon pricing. And you can sign up to be on the legislative team. But one of the ideas that underlies that is that a team or people in an individual town, any town in Massachusetts, can take this kind of legislation, ask their selectmen to write a letter to their state representative saying, we support this carbon tax, right? Mm-hmm. That has enormous impact, and it's something that people can do in their own towns, right? Mm-hmm. So it really is a consequential thing, and it's an idea that people need to get in their heads, that this, you know, this thing that is as abstract as a carbon tax, right, which it's hard to even really truly understand, you know, all of the details. You can do something about it by going to your city hall and getting the selectman that you just voted for to pass a resolution and pass it up the chain. Would you agree, dear?
Exactly. You know, think of it as the grassroots rising up against greenhouse gases.
Yeah. And so, I mean, again, we'll have the link in the blog posting, but the MCAN legislative team and, you know, MCAN exists to try and help people do these kinds of things. So check it out, sign up, and there you go. So, DR, I see that the clock on the wall says we must end our lovely time together. I will tell everyone they can check out the links to most of what we talked about at the blog. It's at massclimateaction.org/blog. There's going to be a link to the SoundCloud. You can listen to this in this podcast and catch up with the live links. You can find us, that link also, on the Facebook page at /MASH Climate Action. You can listen to us directly on your smartphone using Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Overcast, Podbean, SoundCloud, etc., etc. You can also find us on iTunes. So, DR, we will close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the reckless policies of the new administration not be accepted as normal, and that the United States put a long-term and equitable price on carbon. So, DR, thank you very much for being here.
Thanks.
Thanks to everyone for listening. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.
Very cool.